You are listening to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast, the number one wellness podcast designed to provide the latest information to help you achieve your health and wellness goals. Our show features exciting guests, the latest in medical research, and in-depth discussions in current trends on weight loss, nutrition, and fitness. No matter what your interest, the Health and Wellness Podcast has you covered. And now, presenting your illustrious host, Dr. Barry, MD.
Hello, 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 and thank you for listening to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast. I want to thank you for being a faithful listener and checking us out every week on Afro Vibes Radio. But hey, if you somehow don't get a chance to check us out Thursdays, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on Afro Vibes Radio, please don't hesitate to check out our podcast page. That's anchor.fm/HW Connection. That's HWCONNECTION. Again, check us out on our anchor.fm podcast page. Check out all the shows uploaded there immediately after the show airs on Afro Vibes Radio. Also, if you want to listen to the show live on Afro Vibes Radio, please download the app, AfroVibesRadio.com. You can download it from the website or go to your local or favorite, mobile OS app, be it Android or iPhone. Download the app on your phone today. You can stream the show as well as the awesome Afrobeat Music Collection live on your phone for free. Again, no money down, all free, all awesomeness. Do it today. Again, if you want to reach out to me personally, you can always get at me on Instagram. My name, Dr. Barry MD, DrBarryMD. Also, you can email me at drbarryhealth@gmail.com. That's Dr. Barry, DrBarryHealth@gmail.com. And last but not least, Facebook is also where we're at, posting all the shows as well as other exciting articles. Check us out at www.facebook.com/nextlevelweightloss. Again, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We love hearing from listeners. Any feedback, any even sponsorship opportunities, because we are very highly listened podcast, always looking for sponsors. Check us out if you're interested in sponsoring the show. And also, you can do it on the Anchor FM page. You can donate, become a super sponsor. We're going to get a lot of cool freebies for those people who do sign up. So check us out again. It's Dr. Barry here. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the show.
I love my job, man. This is one of the best jobs in the world. You know, one thing people don't realize about this job, though, there's no benefits. You know, no medical. That's not funny. Why would you laugh at that? Black guy has no insurance. I have plenty of insurance. I'm going to trip myself on the way out. Being back in an ambulance. Can't do this, huh, colored guy? Go around the corner, play the siren. Me personally, I think healthcare should be free for all Americans. That's just my opinion. Yeah. For you guys who didn't clap, that means you can't relate. Let me tell you something. It's messed up when you're too broke to go to the doctors. You know you should be at the doctors, but instead you in CVS at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to diagnose yourself. You be walking in like, oh, shit. My kidneys are messed up. I better get me some NyQuil. I heard NyQuil is good for bad kidneys. I'm gonna get some Tums for this tumor I got, too. You know, Tums is in the word tumors. Thank you, six people who got that. I know I'm not the only one in here late at night Googling your symptoms. I know I'm not the only one. Have you ever been so sick you get on the computer like, what in the hell is wrong with me? Am I pregnant? How the hell can I be pregnant? I'm a grown man. And you can always tell when your friends don't have insurance, because they always give you medical advice based on their financial situation. Everybody in here has at least one friend. Whenever you don't feel well, they have a cure for you. Especially my boys. They'd be like, whoa, what's up, dog? What's going on with you, man? Obviously, my friend is black. saw the look on your face. What the hell is he doing? That's how black people communicate. What's up, dog? You all right? What's going on with you? Like, oh, man. My back hurt. I kind of got the chills. Like, You need some Hennessy. Yeah, Hennessy and Pop Rocks will knock that right out. Pop Rocks? What in the hell are you talking about? Go ahead and be sick, dog. I'm just telling you it'll work for me. Thank you, Dr. Pookie.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Health and Wellness Connection radio show / podcast. It's your host, Dr. Pookie. Actually, Dr. Barry. Excuse me, guys. Got a little carried away with that skit. That was a hilarious Reuben Paul, by the way. Fantastic, comedian. But either way, thanks for listening to the show. We are talking about all of the goodness that is existing this week in the world of health and wellness. Yes, we're going to discuss all those things we've been discussing over these past few weeks, including some of the recent numbers. It is the fall season, and the coronavirus pandemic is still a thing. We're approaching the fall season, and unfortunately, it looks like the numbers are trending up across the globe. So we're going to really go a little deeper in some of these areas, some of the hotspots we're seeing, some of the hot topics in the news, especially when it comes to cures and some of the new policy things regarding the whole COVID-19 situation. And lastly, we are going to talk about some of the benefits of physical fitness and why we're seeing people who are remaining active and being physically fit are showing far better outcomes when dealing with coronavirus and COVID-19. So guys, stay tuned. It's going to be an awesome show. So yes, so let's talk about the coronavirus. As you know, guys, this is the fall season. This is mid-October here. And we're looking at some of the latest numbers, and we're seeing that they're starting to trend upwards, guys. Coronavirus is still kind of raging throughout the globe. Of course, the USA is still leading the charge with 8.1 million total cases. Now, one thing that we're seeing in this current new kind of fall season is that the death rate seems to be dropping. We're going to talk about that right after these numbers, but it's very interesting how we're seeing increased numbers of new infections, but we're actually seeing, minimal to no increase in the new deaths that are being recorded, at least those being recorded explicitly to coronavirus. So again, we had almost 60,000 new cases in the United States throughout the country. This is where the show is being shown, but I know all my worldwide listeners, we're going to talk about some of you guys, at least some of the hotspots, not all the listeners because it's too many listeners, but we're going to really talk about some of the other places throughout the globe that's really being affected by the COVID-19 crisis. So United States still leading the charge with number one. Specifically, within the United States, we're seeing certain states that are still kind of extremely, high as far as their prevalence of these new cases. And the number one state is California. California with about 865,000 cases, about 100 deaths throughout the state since yesterday. This is again October 14th when this recording was made. However, what we are seeing too, though, in Texas, which has still always been number two, right behind California throughout this whole time, is seeing a little bit of an increase in the new cases, with almost 6,000 cases throughout the state and about 100 new deaths. So the funny thing is that California and Texas are almost a tale of two states, if you will. California is one of the most strict states in the nation as far as how they are policing or at least regulating, attempting to regulate people's movements during the COVID-19 and pandemic. All, productions in Hollywood are shut down. Beaches are supposed to be really closed. Restaurants are only allowed to serve people outside. It's really, been very particular as far as how you can move around in California. Meanwhile, in Texas, a Republican state, it's been wide open. People are pretty much allowed to do whatever they want. There's been some restrictions in some of the large events, so you can't have massive events, but you can still have gatherings, small gatherings here and there. And people are really free to move around and do what they want. And despite the kind of relative lax restrictions, if you will, in Texas, they've still had a relatively, similar kind of climb with California. That is up until the past few days. They've noticed increasing numbers in the Texas region That's almost surpassing California, and there's a real chance that Texas could be the number one state here pretty soon with new infections. So people are closely looking at various big cities within Texas, like Harris County, which is Houston, Texas, of course, and Dallas, which are some of the leading areas of new infections. So, you know, we're going to be watching those numbers in Texas as well. But like we said, similar to California, despite the new rise in numbers, the death numbers are actually not really moving. About 100 deaths are being recorded throughout the state of Texas and California each day. Florida is right behind them at 64. New York is number four with 23 deaths and about 1,300 new cases. So New York, which has really been very aggressive with their restrictions and really limiting how things can be done in New York, they've definitely been, you know, they were you know, terribly affected by the first wave that happened last fall. So they've been extremely vigilant, making sure they're screening and testing very aggressively. New York is one of the highest testing populations, with 600,000 people per million being tested in New York. So they're doing a very good job making sure they're monitoring folks and tracking those who are ill and screening people aggressively to reduce the spread. And as a result, they've actually, you know, done a very good job keeping their numbers relatively low throughout the summer months and even the fall months. You know, you expect with the highest density of people, they would have a lot of difficulty, you know, keeping people from, you know, getting each other sick. But despite the numbers, they are doing a pretty good job in keeping these people, keeping the numbers from really surging like they were. But again, fall is just starting, so we'll see how things progress as we continue throughout the fall season. Excuse me, guys. Sorry about that. So again, so New York's number four, Georgia's number five, and Illinois, number six, North Carolina's number seven, Arizona, number eight, Tennessee, number nine, and New Jersey's number 10 state. You know, and those numbers are relatively small, about 1,000 cases roughly per day in each of these states. So the United States overall still leading the charge as far as nations are concerned regarding new coronavirus diagnoses. All right, so after United States, you have India. India has been really kind of having a lot of new diagnoses, about 60 to 70,000 a day being diagnosed in India. But despite these, you know, large numbers, they've also seen relatively low death rates. Only about 700 people were believed to have died of the coronavirus infection as of yesterday. And they've been averaging under 1,000 despite, you know, new cases actually numbers going up. Brazil, they're actually holding steady. They've actually dropped a little bit. I guess they've been more aggressive with their, you know, screening, despite a lot of the issues they've had on a governmental level, but they've definitely noticed a downward trend in some of the new infections compared to where they were at, you know, a few weeks ago. And so behind Brazil, Russia is number four with 1.3 million cases, about 14,000 per day, which is really good for a country of that size. Spain is number five with about 11,000 cases per day, about 200 deaths. Argentina is number six, seven is Colombia, eight is Peru, and nine is Mexico. 10 is France. And France is kind of interesting because they also were very badly affected during the initial wave last fall. So they've been very vigilant, making sure that they monitor their new cases very aggressively to ensure there's no significant surge, which led to the significant numbers of people dying over the past, during the last fall season. So they're also being very vigilant as well. But like we said previously, despite all these, you know, huge surges in cases we're seeing, one thing that has been noted by a lot of the researchers is that coronavirus patients that are now presenting, and this is globally actually, they're actually presenting a lot less sick, and a lot less of them are getting those significant complications we saw in the initial pandemic wave. Now, we noticed some of these trends when we looked at some of the coronavirus numbers in Africa. We said how you know, the African continent had really been exposed to the coronavirus almost at the same time as Italy, or very soon afterwards, around late February, March. We're basing this off of the antibody tests that were done in various populations in different parts of the continent. And we noted that it was despite a fairly significant exposure to coronavirus throughout the continent, very few populations were really having those very high death rates. And so there was some belief that maybe the virus is mutating as it's moving from one part of the globe to the other. As for instance, when the Italians were really affected by the coronavirus pandemic that occurred around February of this year, January, February in Italy was very rough. A lot of people were succumbing to the virus. It was believed they had a pretty, you know, particularly dangerous strain of the virus that was affecting them at that time. It was believed that same strain actually moved over to New York and caused a significant calamity we saw there. But it's believed that since it left New York, there's been some mutations going on. And we talked about this briefly on the last show about how the virus is mutating and there's different variations of the virus believed to be affecting various populations. It's believed that some of the virus strains seen in the southern part of the United States are actually a different strain from that found in those that affected New York in the northeast part of the United States. Now, this is the same thing being seen in India and other parts of the globe where we're seeing these lower death rates. And it's believed that the virus may be mutating, resulting in a less lethal virus. And so this is something that many doctors are actually debating, and it's really unclear whether or not this is potentially what could be going on. There was an article in the Washington Post that also we posted in the Next Level Health, Next Level Weight Loss Facebook page. Check that out, guys. And they interviewed a lot of different infectious disease specialists, and they were all remarking about how, despite the surge in numbers, there's been a significant drop in the admissions that we're seeing in the various hospitals. There's very few hospitals that are overflooded at this point, despite the new cases that are being detected. And it's not clear why this is. Many believe that it's possible that people are, you know, trying to take heed to some of the recommendations and trying to improve their overall health and wellness, resulting in people being able to fight the virus a little more effectively. So we all know this death rate is important because this is really the crux of the entire, you know, precautions that were being taken due to the pandemic. We all know that when the virus was first detected and first discovered, it was believed that the mortality rate was very high. Some people put it almost as high as 7% based on some of the initial numbers that were coming out of China. Now, the reality is that because there's some now concern that the Chinese numbers may not have been very accurate, it's really hard to determine whether or not these death rates that were initially predicted are accurate. So, and of course, one thing too that was about those Chinese death rate numbers, it was based mostly on hospitalized patients. So there was not really significant screening being done early on. So you only saw people come to the hospital who were really terminally ill. And by that time, you know, who knows, for every person who came to the hospital very ill, there could have been another 15, 20 that were fine. But because we didn't know what it was, didn't know what to screen for, at that time, it was assumed there was some horrible infection that was taking people out. And the hospitals who had not seen these patients, you know, and they're seeing a bunch of people come in and dying. Of course, there's a high concern. There's a very lethal virus in, you know, in the area. But as the numbers start to play out and other countries start to get their own numbers, for instance, here in the United States, we're seeing now that the death rate may not have been as high as initially suspected. It was actually probably close to around 2-3%. So, and then that was it with, you know, kind of some new, you know, factors being put into play. But now, you know, with all the mass testing going on, we're seeing there's a very significant number of asymptomatic infections, people who are testing positive but really have no symptoms whatsoever. And these numbers are probably not being included in the total numbers of infected or positive people. But now with new kind of data extrapolations being done by the CDC and other groups, it's believed the death rate may be around 0.65%. So this is extremely low, actually, when you look at the numbers. And it is giving new light to think that maybe the coronavirus is not as deadly as it was once believed to have been in most populations. However, there is definitely significant risk in the elderly population and the obesity and the population of those who are obese, because those are two populations we're seeing very high risks of complications and potential, you know, long-term issues with these coronavirus infections. Now, the folks in the public health space feel that the lower death rates are probably due to a shift in the demographics of those who are being stricken with the virus, meaning that younger people are probably the bulk of the new infections. So because there's a lot of young people who are being discovered to be positive because they're asymptomatic or they have minimal symptoms and they're getting screened and getting determined to be positive, it's now felt that the virus may not have been as deadly as it was once believed due to the fact that there's many people who are getting the virus and not potentially, you know, getting very, very ill. But some bioscientists believe that it's very possible the virus could potentially be devolving, if you will, meaning that it's actually mutating and becoming less deadly as it exists in the, you know, natural environment. So it's something that scientists are obviously closely watching. We are going to be monitoring those kind of different virus morphologies. The beauty of this whole virus is that it's a very excellent course in kind of biology, biochemistry, from how they're discovering the new, you know, medications and treatments, which we discussed multiple times in this show, to how the virus works and how to figure out ways to neutralize it. This is something that's really put the kind of the brain power of the various biochemists and scientists throughout the globe to the test, making people work together who really wouldn't want to begin with. So it's really kind of, I think, a great thing overall for the scientific community, making them get on the same page to really find a way to deal with this viral infection. So that's the thing about the virus death rate. We're gonna be following these death rates closely. So sit tight, guys. We're gonna take a quick break. After the break, we're gonna discuss more about some of the other things related to the pandemic. It's in the news, as well as some of the things you can do to help improve your body's ability to fight whatever infection that may come across your way this fall season. Again, it's Dr. Barry here. Stay tuned. We got more awesomeness for you after the break. Peace. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Health and Wellness Connection podcast/radio show. It's your host, Dr. Barry. I want to thank you guys for listening to the show and really kind of, you know, letting us know your opinions of the show, and, you know, letting us, you know, just giving us all the love and feedback you have been doing so far. I want to continue to encourage you guys to do that. If you have any concerns or questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. Instagram is the easiest way to find me, at Dr. Barry MD. Also, email drberryhealth@gmail.com. All right, so let's talk about some of the other research that's coming out that we're seeing and that we want to, you know, make sure you're aware of. It's been actually shown that exercise has been an excellent way to kind of reduce the risk of one of the significant complications of a coronavirus infection, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome. Now, acute respiratory distress syndrome is basically what it sounds like. Your lungs, which is your respiratory system, or part of your respiratory system, are basically in acute distress. And why this occurs, because it's believed that the coronavirus infection causes a severe inflammatory response. This inflammatory response essentially causes your cells in your lungs to not function properly, cause a lot of fluid to build up. This actually causes you to not be able to breathe, which is one of the main causes that many people who have coronavirus typically pass away. So this is obviously very, very important. So scientists have been researching this whole phenomenon and have been trying to figure out what are some of the ways that we can reduce the patients who are developing this coronavirus complication, or reduce the risk of them developing this complication, I should say. It's believed that this acute respiratory distress syndrome affects about 3 to 17% of all patients with COVID-19. And of course, it's believed that those 3 to 17% of patients are those who are particularly more elderly or who have other complications or risk factors like obesity, diabetes, asthma, high blood pressure, and et cetera. Now, it's believed that the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, they estimate about 20 to 42% of patients hospitalized for COVID-19 will actually develop ARDS. And those admitted to the intensive care unit, which is where you go to get severe medical treatment, usually involving aggressive, you know, pulmonary treatment like intubation or severe high flow oxygen, patients who develop, you know, or who have to go to the ICU, for instance, usually have between 67% to 85% of those patients who go to the ICU typically have acute respiratory distress syndrome. So clearly this is a big deal and is one of the big reasons patients with coronavirus tend to die. So researchers have been really trying to figure out a way to help reduce that complication from occurring. And one thing we're seeing is that exercise has been an extremely important and effective way to help reduce this risk factor. Now, of course, you know, exercise helps with weight loss and keeping you from, you know, reducing your inflammatory risk profile. But exercise actually has been known to actually stimulate the production of a very powerful antioxidant. You know, antioxidants are one of the best things that you can consume and just, you know, can take into your body because it helps, you know, neutralize harmful chemicals and compounds that are known to cause cancer. So exercise is known to produce a very powerful antioxidant known as extracellular superoxide dismutase, which the name is not really important, but just know that this powerful antioxidant has been known to neutralize harmful chemicals like free radicals that are known to damage tissue and damage cells. So exercising actually allows the body to produce this antioxidant naturally. It allows it to circulate in the bloodstream where it goes around and really just kind of, you know, clears up all the toxins in your blood. So exercise is literally a way to detoxify yourself. And that's what a lot of people don't understand, how powerful physical fitness is. Not simply just getting muscles and trying to be cute, but it's actually a health treatment, literally, because your body can use some of the effects of exercise to help neutralize some of the potential damage that can occur from other ailments. So it's believed that, you know, if you're actually diagnosed with COVID-19, it's been shown that production of this antioxidant, which you can get through exercise, can be helpful in reducing some of the damage that is seen in some of these inflammatory conditions like COVID-19. So it's literally seen that exercise is literally medicine. It's not like a chore. If you're going to pop a pill, you know, you can sometimes exercise and save yourself that headache as far as being on a certain medication. We've known that exercise can take people off meds for diabetes. If you're working out regularly, you can potentially, you know, wean yourself off diabetic medications. Again, this is something you have to do, obviously, with your physician. I wouldn't recommend doing it alone. And at the same time, you know, you want to make sure if you're not doing it, you're finding ways to incorporate it into your daily routine. So let's say you want to get more physically active, but you're not sure how to do it. You're not sure, you know, what you should be doing to, you know, do it safely. Well, here's some basic recommendations, and I'm taking these from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which is a website set up by the U.S. government to help educate citizens on what are the ways to get healthy. Now, the great news about this website is that it's been well-researched, a lot of great information on here, and it's free to the public, hhs.gov. Check it out, guys, if you're bored and you just want to get some education. But let me tell you a little bit about it, though. Now, if you're being, looking at getting more active, trying to, be more physically fit, first things first, please schedule an appointment with your doctor. It's very important if you've not been active regularly, you've been kind of a little more sedentary, meaning, you know, not active, and you want to get back into it. You don't want to do something that could potentially hurt yourself, because a lot of times you may have underlying issues that you may not be aware of. So if you're just jumping right into the gym and trying to, you know, compete with, you know, a little 15-year-old kid or a 21-year-old athlete, you can easily hurt yourself. So it's very important you take it slow, take it easy, and get a full health screening before you really kind of get into, you know, a real physical kind of workout regimen. But even if you want to do something real light, you don't feel any particular issues, you know, very light exercise can be something you can start immediately. Like I tell patients, especially if you're someone who's not really active, consider doing a casual walk. And just look at slowly and steadily progressing your capabilities. Now, the official recommendation for adults, as far as according to the Health and Human Services Department, it's about 150 minutes to 300 minutes of moderate intensity exercise a week. So 150 minutes is about 2 hours, 2.5 hours to 5.5 hours. So in a nutshell, they want at least 3 to 5 hours of working out per week, moderate intensity, meaning a casual walk where you bring a light sweat, maybe a light jog if you're a little more fit. Or they recommend is 75 minutes, which is 1 hour and 15 minutes, to 150 minutes, which is 2 hours and 30 minutes a week of vigorous intensity exercises, like intense running where you're breaking a significant sweat, you're working hard, significant heart rate elevation for a prolonged period of time. Those are what we would consider vigorous intensity. And they're recommending at least 75 minutes to 150 minutes a week. So you can easily break that down if you want to, you know, do maybe 30 minutes a day for a week, or do an hour of low intensity exercise a day for a week. You can really get some of those health benefits we're seeing, especially when it comes to, you know, increasing those antioxidant levels, helping, you know, promote, you know, decrease inflammation, and just strengthening muscles and just kind of improving overall, you know, body habits and shape. So there's just so many benefits to working out, and, you know, and these numbers I'm just quoting are kind of the minimal numbers. People, you know, if they're more physically able, can do more, because if you're, you know, able to do more, you actually are able to gain additional health benefits. You know, so I tell patients, you know, or anyone who's interested in working out, you want to start slow, number one. If you've not been active for a long time, definitely get a full health and wellness physical. And just to give you a quick announcement again, I'm going to be having my own virtual, you know, consultant practice, guys. So you can be able to reach out to me if you like, and I can even work with you on a one-on-one basis, and we can kind of figure something out to help you get on your health and wellness goal. So guys, stay tuned for that. So also, want to talk about, you know, some of the other things we're seeing when it comes to physical fitness. But what about the young people? A lot of people are noticing that, you know, kids, especially with the pandemic, a lot of people being homeschooled, a lot of kids and adults have been gaining weight just due to sitting around the house more often than not and not doing the physical activities they may have been doing if they were in school. Well, kids definitely need to be active, because kids, if they become obese, are definitely have an increased risk for a lot of other ailments. Now, when it comes to the coronavirus, kids are actually okay. One thing we're seeing is that kids are not being affected nowhere near the same level as the adults are, but we know obesity is something that can begin in childhood and become a problem in adulthood. So we have to make sure we, you know, address it early to ensure that, you know, we have healthy kids growing up into healthy adults. Now, kids, they should be doing at least 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity a day. They should be, you know, running around, some sort of intense aerobic physical activity every day. So this is easy to be solved, especially my homeschoolers now, which is most of the people in the country. Go to the park, you know, take kids to the playground, let them run around, play on the playground swings, all that stuff. That can be fantastic physical activity for kids. And I encourage adults too, if you're up to it, get off the playground with them, you know, jump on the swings, do some pull-ups on the monkey bars. You know, there's a lot of exercise you can do at the playground that's very effective. I'm a huge proponent of calisthenics. You know, body weight exercises are an excellent way to tone and strengthen, and you get a lot of those benefits that you get with physical fitness with a great calisthenics routine. So, you know, one thing I always recommend, you know, if you have kids and you want to, you know, get physically fit or be more active, try to make it a family affair. You know, take your kids with you when you go to the park. You know, maybe get bikes and y'all ride around as a family. That can be a great way to incorporate family time and physical fitness time. Kill two birds with one stone. What about my pregnant women out there? You know, a lot of women right now, corona time, people are coupling up, having babies, getting pregnant. Pregnant women are still recommended to be active. You know, women who are pregnant should do at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise a week. So casual exercise, not going hardcore with it, but casual exercise can help kind of, you know, promote a healthy pregnancy, help promote healthy heart, and it's an overall way to promote a good wellness practice throughout your pregnancy, guys. So, you know, physical fitness has never been more important. At least we're seeing now in this pandemic that being active can really have many benefits, guys. So you want to definitely consider that when you're looking at ways to stay healthy in this pandemic. So at the end of the day, guys, this is going to be a marathon, not a sprint. We hope that, you know, with proper movements and other developments, we're going to get some new, you know, treatment options that will help us, give us more ways to approach, you know, getting fit, getting healthy, or and staying, you know, well. That being said, we want to make sure in the meantime we're doing everything we can to stay healthy, and that includes regular physical activity. All right, so moving on from the exercise topic, let's briefly hit the topic of vaccines. As you all know, vaccines have been a big topic here on the show. We've been really kind of, you know, tracking some of the different progression of different countries. Russia actually released its second vaccine. You know, their first vaccine, the Sputnik, came out a few months ago, and we have not heard any kind of huge kind of issues regarding complications or whatnot. But again, Russia is one of those countries that if they did have things going on, we may not have ever been told about it, so we never know. Either way, here in the United States, there are some companies that are also working on vaccines, actually quite a few. But one new company that's kind of emerged lately is known as Eli Lilly. They are actually working with Lilly is the company, working with a Canadian company, AbCellera. And they're actually working on a 2-antibody combo drug, similar to the medication we talked about with Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, the one that produced the antibody drug that the President Trump received. Now, this drug, they're actually combining it with, this antibody treatment with remdesivir, which is the other antiviral medication that's shown to be effective in treating patients with coronavirus and COVID-19. So right now, like we said, the remdesivir is an emergency use drug only, unless you're the president, obviously. You can get that drug sooner. But right now, they're trying to pair this remdesivir medication with this new antibody medication from Lilly. Now, they're trying to see if this thing should work and help reduce some of the severe complications we're seeing with coronavirus. However, they've actually paused this study because they're worried about potential issues that they're seeing with other vaccine studies. And also, because of the different complications and the president kind of pushing for vaccines to come out before the election, which does not seem to be possible at this point, they want to be extra careful in what they do to ensure that when it does come out, the public is going to be as confident as they feel they should be. Because one thing we're seeing is that people's confidence in this vaccine is pretty low. It's believed that only 20 to 30% of Americans at this point in time would accept the vaccine if it was offered. So many scientists and other people in the scientific community believe that more needs to be done to educate the public as well as, let folks know the potential benefits. But who knows? Herd immunity is coming back too as a potential way to deal with this whole coronavirus as well. So herd immunity is the idea that let the entire population, in a certain area get the virus. And what we're going to do is potentially let the young people get the virus. And then we're going to protect the elderly and the vulnerable, which is immunocompromised, people who have weakened immune systems or whatever. So they're going to try to protect the elderly and the immunocompromised and let the young kind of do normal things and get the infection. This will then result in a herd immunity because it's believed that young people will get the infection, recover, and then develop antibodies that will make them immune. So it's believed that this process will allow the population to be able to, tolerate the virus and go from there. However, it's believed that this kind of whole phenomenon is still very far off. It's going to be, right now it's believed that, I think the last number we checked, it's believed that, again, we need about 85 to 90% of the population to be exposed to the virus in order for this herd immunity to be effective. Now, ideally, we want to develop a herd immunity kind of phenomenon via vaccination. If we vaccinate the public and most people are vaccinated, most people have antibodies, this will kind of keep the virus at bay. But if people are naturally getting the virus in a public, environment, you don't know how people respond. Some people can get severe complications and die. Some people can get no complications, but you never know. And this is the fear of the herd immunity kind of strategy. Now, one thing that was done that was very unique, the White House actually came together and they signed a petition. A couple of senior administration officials, they created a declaration known as the Great Barrington Declaration. And for those who know me, my first name is Barrington. I had nothing to do with this declaration, so please don't write me emails or texts demanding I explain myself. I had nothing to do with it. But anyways, the Great Barrington Declaration argues against lockdowns and calls for reopening of businesses and schools. So this is something the Trump administration is starting to embrace now. They're saying that they're tired of this whole, lockdown and it's hurting the country. We should reopen everything. And this is kind of something that's being debated on Capitol Hill. So again, I don't want to get too political here, but, know that there's really kind of a lot of back and forth regarding the right way to approach this pandemic. At this point, I think it's up to the researchers and scientists to kind of let us know the best strategy. And let's all try to keep each other safe. So again, I'm going over time, guys, so I'm sorry, but we got to end the show. It's been a great, great show. Hopefully the sound is better. We got new equipment, so hopefully it won't be that crusty, dusty audio we had last episode. Won't happen again. Thanks for joining us and listening to our show this week. This is the Health and Wellness Connection podcast/radio show. This is your host, Dr. Barry. Have a healthy and safe week. I will see you guys next time. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Health and Wellness Connection podcast and radio show. For more information on ways to get healthy, please check us out. www.anchor.fm/HW Connection. Here you can re-listen to the show, check out older shows, and even further support the show by becoming a subscriber to the podcast. Please check us out today. Again, that's anchor.fm/HW Connection. And also, don't forget to follow Dr. Barry on Instagram @DrBarryMD. Until next time, stay healthy.